Today is episode 90 of Fancy Ramen Podcast. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott.
And you'll have to excuse the rough editing this episode because I'll be leaving on a trip for a few-day trip, and hence I will have very limited amounts of time to edit if I don't want to try and edit it on the road in a hotel room with horrible Wi-Fi.
Is it vacation? Is it vacation or work?
It's work-related, so.
Okay.
Do you know Neil? It's always work-related.
Yeah.
I like cross my fingers that Neil mistakenly got a plane ticket somewhere. He's like, well, I guess I'll have to enjoy myself while I'm there.
I guess I accidentally am traveling to Japan, and I guess I'm accidentally spending a lot of time in a cat-made cafe in Akihabara. Whoops.
Nice. Speaking of accidentally taking a trip, I'm going to PAX this in January if anybody wants to join.
Oh,
PAX
shit.
Is in Seattle, right?
No, it's San Antonio for PAX South.
PAX South. Okay, PAX West is Seattle.
Yeah. And that one already happened.
Wait, what time is it?
It's January. Pulling up a calendar now. The 18th through 20th.
Oh, man, that might perfectly line up with me having an available amount of vacation time to go and the funds. Shoot, I might see you there.
Yeah, let's talk about this some more later. It. Yeah, that sounds fun.
Yeah, I'd be interested and capable, so. Nice. And then, of course, there's always PAX Seattle. Like, Seattle's an eight-hour drive from me, so I can get there. I'll probably go for this upcoming PAX West event, which is, I think, many, many months out. But that's an opportunity that I can take out here.
Well, what have you? What have the two of you been up to aside from contemplating PAX trips?
I've just been watching anime and playing Call of Duty, actually, and Red Dead Redemption. So I pass.
Yeah, you did all the requisite activities for the podcast. You played games, you watched some anime, you played some more games.
And I bought tickets.
Two packs.
Yep.
Okay. I'm in a similar vein, honestly, Neil. I've watched some anime. I've played some Red Dead. I saw somebody playing Red Dead as I was driving down the street, like through their home window, and Sierra noticed it. She was like, hey, they're playing too. And I was like, well, that is sufficient hype for this game when you're seeing it out in the wild. So yeah, I've played quite a bit more Red Dead, a little bit more Super Mario Party. And trying to think, that's about it for the game lineup right now. I was contemplating getting a PS4 Pro this weekend. There's a deal going on with GameStop where you can get like $175 trade-in for a standard PlayStation 4 towards a Pro, which is $400. So I think that cuts the price close to half.
Dude,
at $225.
GameStop's been killing it with these deals. You can trade in your Nintendo Switch right now for $200 towards a Nintendo Switch bundle. So $150 for a new Nintendo Switch.
Interesting.
That's because a lot of their market is used merchandise. A lot of their profit margin comes from that. So I'm glad to see them. I mean, I think they've done this to some extent before, but I'm glad to see they're continuing the practice of embracing their used merchandise and used department.
Yeah, it's sad to see gaming hardware kind of fall out of the loop. I used to use, back in Omaha, Gamers a lot, but I think their exchanges got worse and worse and worse, and finally, I assume they tanked. They went out of business.
Yeah, our first potential sponsor went out of business. Rest in peace, Gamers. I don't know if it was a matter of having like a bad, or being in a bad market, so to speak. Or
it's a tough market, and they didn't do great on their like customer service, or I guess service end in general.
Yeah, there's a question as to whether or not it was managed well, but that sort of argument tends to come up whenever a business fails to begin with. Like, well, it was mismanaged, and that's why it went under. And that's probably a factor. There are, like, actually a few, quote-unquote, mom-and-pop and small chain type stores in Omaha again, too. So I don't know them because I am a big label jackass. So
aren't we all? It's the ease and the convenience at times.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I'm a sucker to Amazon. As much as I love to shit talk Jeff Bezos day in, day out, like, Amazon helps me out a great deal. I just bought, actually, relevant to that, I think I decided not to take that PlayStation 4 deal this morning when I woke up, and I thought, no, instead I need more storage space on my Switch. And so I bought a 256 gig micro SD for my Switch so I can download Super Smash Brothers and get Piranha Plant as the bonus fighter.
Are there any specific reasons? Oh, well, two questions. First one, is there any specific reason why you wanted to upgrade to a PS4 Pro? And did it have anything to do with, like...
Yeah, to keep it short and sweet, I have a 4K TV. I felt like maybe it was a good idea then to upgrade my hardware to operate with that. Decided that it really wasn't going to be worth the benefit versus the cost. And so instead I thought, well, a lot of storage space on my Switch would be nice so I can download more games as opposed to buy physical copies. Because of the Switch's portability, it would be nice to just have it, like, always on the hardware versus the little cards. But I guess I have room for the cards in the carrying case for it. So I don't know. I really want that Piranha Plant, and I don't want to go through the nuisance of having to register through my Nintendo account or whatever when I get a physical purchase, because I can't remember if that was a nuisance of a process for me or not.
Wait, you have to do that if you get the physical one, if you want the Piranha?
Yeah, if you get the physical copy, I think within the first, I don't know, it's like month or two, then you can register to your Nintendo account to get Piranha Plant, who is a bonus fighter.
But if you just download it, you don't have to do any of that?
If you download it, it's automatically credited to your account because you have to have an account, like, connected to Nintendo download. Online.
Damn.
Yeah.
I might just be getting a not physical copy of this. Fuck.
Yeah. It's just, and I don't know if it's actually that big of a nuisance, but I was just like, oh, I don't want to add an extra two steps to whatever I'm going to do. So
I'm sure this is old news, but holy shit, Piranha Plant is in Smash, but not Waluigi.
I know. Waluigi is getting just completely disrespected here on this lineup. They added the last two additions, by the way, so we can keep on the Smash news. They added Ken, which I don't know if anyone cares about that at all, except for your Street Fighter diehard fans. It is a replication of Street Fighter 2 Turbo's Ken. So that's where his, like, move set comes from, which I'm a fan of. Street Fighter 2 Turbo is the Street Fighter I have the most familiarity with. And then the other one is Incineroar, I think, which is a wrestling fire type Pokemon from the most recent series.
Yep. Oddly enough, he is not a fighting type.
He seems very... he's like dark and fire or something.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought so, because one of his moves is revenge. And I know that's a dark type move. And they sometimes do weird stuff with making dark types and fighting types have similar, like, move sets. But he's like a pro wrestling enemy. So every time he executes an attack, if you don't interrupt it, he'll, like, strike a pose in Smash. It's immediately interruptible, so it won't impact gameplay in any way for, like, high-level intense gameplay. But if you dunk on somebody, he will pose afterward, essentially, which is fun. Like, the character seems to have a lot of personality for a Pokemon edition, but I could have never guessed that they were going to add this fighter to the game.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I have a convenient screenshot that I should probably somehow figure out how to get from my Switch to the internet, which is Waluigi saying something like, I feel terrible, from Mario Party.
Uh-huh.
That feels like it could be a Smash meme now.
I saw when they announced Smash and all the fighters that were going to be in it originally, and people asked, where's Waluigi? I think, did you all see the meme where it's like a Waluigi stuffed doll that's like face down in a rain, like on rainy concrete near a gutter?
Yeah.
That's a pretty good one, too. Yeah, so Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, they've announced the final list of fighters with this last bit. Piranha Plant won't come out with the game, but will be releasing a couple months afterward. And he's free DLC. They already showed some of his moveset, but they probably don't have him completely polished just yet. They brought up that they will be doing some tweaking and balancing. The online system will be more easy for both playing for fun and playing for competitive fights. They're essentially like building in and ranking or elo system. Self-destructs will be punished a little bit more harshly. You can get like you can get the same kind of punishments that you get in League for like DCing or intentionally feeding, where you can be like banned from the queue for a bit. I don't know how I feel about that, but we'll see if it's an effective implementation. And then finally they mentioned that for their DLCs, they'll have 5 fighters coming out, 5 stages, and 5 musical tracks or whatever for it. So you can either buy a bundle for like $25, or maybe it's $20, or you can buy them each individually for like $5. So Smash at minimum will probably cost anyone who wants to have all their fighters $85.
Ouch.
But, yeah. Oh, and don't forget, you have to get an amiibo for each character. At least that was my old roommate's approach, and so it's only going to be somewhere around like $600, you know, going into this.
I just need the Ken and the Piranha.
Wait, oh, the Ken and the Piranha. I thought you said the can and the Piranha. I was like, that's a pipe, buddy. yeah, but that is the latest and last bit of information from Nintendo Direct before Super Smash releases on the 7th of December. And I'm very hyped.
And in different news, I watched anime for the first time in a long time. I started watching a lovely little piece about a girl having a dream to become an idol. And then immediately getting hit by truck cone.
Isekai?
Hmm?
Is it an isekai?
Define isekai again for me.
Isekai is, there's variations on it, but basically, person in normal world gets taken to reborn whatever in different fantasy world, usually idol modeled land. After a game.
Yeah. Nah, she just gets brought back as a zombie. And yeah, it's kind of wonderful. I forgot what this is called. If it's like Zombie Saga.
Yeah, it's like Zombie Idol Saga.
Is this the Zombieland
like
thing that I keep hearing about?
Yeah, that's
for anime.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not, it has nothing to do with Zombieland, the American film with Jesse Eisenberg.
Woot. Hype for that film, always. Zombieland Saga is an actual real delight to watch. After watching that YouTube video I sent to both of you about like Fall's anime lineup in a nutshell. I'm not sure if you got to see that, Neil.
It was very highly recommended by the guy who runs that channel.
I haven't, because I've been way too busy looking into something else that we'll talk about maybe after this topic.
Siblings in sweatsuits.
What?
That's what we talked about last time.
Yeah, jobless siblings. Not that, but yeah. Something a little more topical.
Oh, but yeah, so no, this is it pretty much starts off as your run of the mill thing for about 30 seconds until the
until a truck hits a main character.
Yeah, and so the truck hits the main character, and then it's like it does some really cool things with when she wakes up, she's colored like an actual live human, so that's how she perceives herself until she sees herself in a mirror, and then after that they've like changed her skin skin and hue to be more zombie-ish looking.
Mm-hmm.
So it does a lot of really nice things like that, and it's weird. I say just like give the first episode a try. It's very much a death metal and death metal episode. The second episode is a turns into a hip hop slash rap episode. And that's as far as I've gotten so far.
So I wonder if they're gonna attack. Oh, go ahead, Neil.
Is this like, is it a comedy or is it actually like a quote unquote zombie anime?
It is a comedy. Kind of, I guess. Yeah.
It looks like it's a funny show.
It's funny. So basically, like, all the pop culture references of zombies exist in this world because the guy who brings all the zombie girls back to life shows them a clip of a bunch of movies where the zombies are getting killed in various ways. And he's like, yeah, don't go out into the real world because can't let anybody know you're a zombie. It's weird. But yeah, they're zombies. One of like the lines was like, yeah, just follow your instincts. And the main character goes, I think Aichan will bite someone. Turns out Aichan did bite someone that episode. But anyway, but she's a biter. It's fun stuff.
I'm at a loss right now. I'll check it out, though. I'm always into like the weird. As long
as
it looks
colorful and bombastic, like.
Very much
I haven't
so.
Seen it yet, but I'm willing to check it out too from a recommendation.
Yeah, there's such a thing as like intentional trash, and that might be what this is, if that makes sense. Like, not all right. That's mean.
That is mean spirited for never seeing it.
But you know what I mean? Like, okay, the anime Bo 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 is intentional trash, and it's great because of it.
Okay.
I wouldn't call Bo 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 trash. It's a fourth wall breaking masterpiece.
Of nose hair battles, yes.
Yes, of nose hair battles. Where the characters even admit that they have no idea what's going on in this anime. I like it.
I just can't get any sort of feel from this show by Google searching. I see the rap battle things, but she's obviously a human in that point. Do they wear a shit ton of makeup to look like humans?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
One of the guys gets like very good at, and what sets the rap battle off is just kind of amazing as well. Because they're trying to hide the fact that they're zombies and one of the characters is literally falling apart. And it's just like, come on, man. We're not even like trying here. What kind of human being actually loses its head and still functions? There's a lot of dried squid. It's great.
I hear good things about dried squid, flavor wise.
I hear nothing about dried squid flavor wise. Where are you hearing things about dried squid flavor wise?
Yeah, what kind of circles do you occupy?
Some old coworkers were talking about how good squid was.
Huh.
So
I mean squid in a salad is pretty solid. I've had like seaweed and squid with some sort of like acidic dressing or whatever. That's
probably
solid.
Squid ink, maybe?
I don't think it's squid. I've had squid ink too, and that's a little different. But yeah, you'll also have seaweed and squid ink sometimes. That's not bad. Not as much of my thing.
Oh, speaking of squid ink, Neil, have I told you to go to that new ramen place?
Jinya?
Yeah.
No, but I've been there a couple times.
What do you think? Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. It's not bad.
It's the best ramen in town, though.
Really? I don't know. It's fine. Like, it's not nearly as salty as some of the places in town.
Is that what you're looking for?
No. It's just like, that's like a good remark. Their takoyaki is actually fucking fantastic.
I haven't had their takoyaki yet.
Maybe like the big highlight is that if you want like the trashiest gyudon you can get, that is the place for it, where you get like a lot of fat and grizzle. Which, like, sometimes you're in the mood for that for a beef bowl. Like, it's low-quality beef bowl, but unfortunately it's, like, $10, which does not feel like a low-quality beef bowl price.
Hangover Cure Beef Bowl at that setup.
It's like if you want to get that Persona 4 vibe where you're a bunch of high school kids going out for beef bowls, that's the type of beef bowl I imagine they would get, but just at the same time, it's also like on the pricier side. Do not get their curry. It is not the same curry you're expecting.
Mm.
So is it Japanese curry?
It's the right type of roux, although it's like not a great roux to begin with. And yes, it's a Japanese curry. The problem is instead of having like chopped up beef or pork or chicken and potato chunks, an onion, and whatever else you want in your curry, what you get is just the curry roux and then ground chicken.
Oh.
Yeah, it's...
Well, if it makes you feel any better, it is a ramen place.
Beef bowls and curry are like so fucking easy.
Yeah.
Don't put them on your menu if you're gonna serve that. Like, Eco Ramen, at least in town, has that, whatever that hot rock beef dish is, which is actually pretty decent, if not a little on the pricey side.
I really didn't like it.
Really? I thought it was fine.
I was really depressed with it because it didn't come with rice.
Yeah, that was weird. It, like, they're serving it as like a side, like an appetizer or something, right? So
but it's pricier than their ramen, so.
Right. Like it should come with rice for free. I don't get that part either.
And Nico's rice is very bad, but also it's a ramen shop.
So
why was I ordering anything that's not ramen?
So that's the thing. Like, all of my experiences with ramen are kind of degraded by the fact that, like, when I go out to even Denver, the ramen is exponentially better and cheaper. So
I could dig it, but at that point you're in Denver.
I know. A much better place. Now,
exactly.
Okay, ramen aside, let's talk about some video games since we want to keep this somewhat concise so I don't have to lose my or miss my plane to edit. I played a game, as did Scott, and maybe Cookie attempted to play this game as well. It's hot off the presses, brand new, straight from the maker of Undertale, called Deltarune.
Before you say anything, no, I did not attempt to play it, and the reason I did not attempt to play it is because they had the audacity to mock and make fun of an end-user license agreement, which, honestly, if you're signing an end-user license agreement and if it just says anything that happens beyond this point, you're cool with? Nah, son. Nah. I at least want it to pretend like it's like I'm not signing my soul away. So
Cookie did the responsible thing, and we're laughing at him for it.
So just out of, like I tried to click, yes, I'm okay with this, but I couldn't. I physically couldn't bring myself to do it. I was like, nah. And then, like, 2 seconds later, I read a news article. Yeah, so there are sporadic reports of the thing.
The uninstaller deleting the directory that you installed it's under. So that's why I isolated it to this flash drive. So I also played Deltarune, but I played it safe and I put it on an empty flash drive. And I was like, okay, you can wipe the whole directory. There's nothing else to delete. Like, this will work.
Exactly.
So,
which is certainly seems cool with it. You thought that the end user agreement was, you know, just trying to be coy, but in fact, it was being meta on two different levels. Like, one, that, apparently my skills as a programmer are not sufficient enough to trust that my program will not delete the directory it's installed in. And also because it's, in-game meta reasons as well.
Yeah, it's so true. But there's several jokes layered in there and the threat of actual consequence.
Yep. So, makes sense, right? I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that the majority of people probably are aware of what Undertale is, but for context, Undertale is kind of like a genre redefining game. That
it's the 2015 game of the year.
What genre did it redefine?
Redefined
RPG.
The classic, very old school, like Mother/Earthbound RPG, and a couple other elements too. Like, it took a lot of inspiration, I think, from the design of that game, but overall it also has like a bullet hell system incorporated into it. There's dating sim elements Like the fun thing about it is the game is truly like a love letter to a lot of classic gaming.
At the same time, though, it kind of twists your expectations of what you do in an RPG, because Undertale gives you consequences to playing it like a regular RPG, where if you kill things and raise your experience points and raise your LV or level, or so we think these acronyms are, you end up facing the consequences later when you're told that LV actually stands for level of violence or levels of violence, and EXP actually stands for execution points. So Deltarune is kind of a different approach in several different ways. Also, according to Toby Fox's, that's his name, right? Toby Fox? Yeah.
Toby Fox, yeah.
The creator of Undertale, Toby Fox's own words through a Q&A that was released timely after the release of this quote-unquote survey, which turned out to be the first chapter of Deltarune, and saying that choices in this game, you're not going to have choices, or your choices won't matter, per se. This is also a statement that occurs in Deltarune throughout. But basically, the game is disguised to work in the same way that Undertale is, where you are given, in this case, characters to use, and you can fight, but you can also use ACT in order to pacify or appease enemies and let them go or spare them without violence.
But instead of playing as an individual like in Undertale, you actually have a party that you manage. However, I mean, how spoilery do we want to be on this? I don't think Cookie cares that much. And
yeah,
for listeners,
the floodgates are open, I'd say.
Okay, yeah, we'll give them a heads up. Like, at this point, anything that we talk about mechanically is going to spoil something that's interesting or exciting if you want to play the game.
This is a three-hour game, tops, I think, and maybe 3 hours, and I talk to everyone, so...
Yeah, exactly, and it's like, I also played... I played as explorative and pretty much as slowly as possible, and I still got it done before my morning was over yesterday. But anyway, digging back into it, you're playing with multiple characters, but that doesn't mean that you actually have... you're not operating under the assumption that these characters are cooperative with you. If they have different, essentially, goals or different intentions in mind, you may not be able to actually get them to do what you want while using them in this combat system. I don't know what that means for the future of the game, but essentially, if you're trying to go for the pacifist style route that was available in Undertale, it's going to be much harder when you have a teammate that's trying to actively kill any enemy that's in front of you. And so you end up playing this game where you're balancing trying to keep enemies alive long enough to pacify them or spare them. Otherwise, one of your teammates may just like dunk the whole other team before you have a chance to avoid a violent conclusion to your conflict.
Now, did you actually try and after the fact, after playing through once, did you try and hurt or kill enemies afterwards?
No, I never wanted to.
So, like, I don't necessarily think we need to go into, like, every mechanic in the game, and instead can kind of highlight what the demo does. Yeah. But, so first and foremost, once you get through the game once, which we'll probably talk more on a meaningful level for a bit, on what the story is in Deltarune, you do unlock multiple save points or save states. So when you start, you only have one place to save, but when you beat the game and start Deltarune up again, you actually have three slots, just like the original Undertale. And another interesting point to make is that, as I alluded to before, your choices may not actually have much consequence, according to Toby Fox. You can't kill anything, and you can never raise your level or experience. Anytime you actually beat an enemy, they just escape or run away. Not to say that doesn't actually impact things later, or at the very end of the game, or not very end, but at the end of the Dark World sequence.
Okay.
But the changes are extremely minute in comparison to Undertale. And also, I mean, this is just one chapter, so who knows how different it is. But there's a lot of really interesting contrasts to Deltarune as to Undertale. And I think the first one really is about the mood that the game gives off. Like, yeah, you after creating your quote-unquote vessel and giving the vessel a name and providing the game with
your name,
yes, and the game discarding it and saying that your choices don't matter and that you're born into this world. You don't choose who you are. You're presented like with a super cheery town setting, but even then, I don't know, I could tell immediately that there was stuff that was inherently wrong from the get-go.
You wake up in a room in which one side is decorated or outfitted in a way that suggests someone's living a pretty like happy and fulfilling life, and then the other side of the room has a stain and a wagon with an empty birdcage in it and literally nothing else. And that's the side you sleep on, the shitty end of the room. And so, yeah, go ahead.
And you learn just from there that the person on the other side of the room is apparently your brother, Asriel. So for anyone playing Undertale, Asriel is essentially one of the main antagonists of that game. And the pacifist ending has you, or rather I should say Frisk, the protagonist, getting everyone out from the underground world and living peacefully. And that involves the main character, Frisk, living with Toriel, the cow mom, as she's been called from various people. And
goat fandoms. Mom. She's goat, a goat.
Mom, cow mom, either or. So in this new world, in Deltarune, and I say new world specifically because you end up playing as a character that looks a lot like Frisk, but instead your color palette actually looks more like Kara, who is like the true antagonist in Undertale. Instead of having a blue and pink striped shirt, it's a green and white striped shirt, which actually...
green and yellow, I think.
Yeah, yellow stripe. Sorry, I'm
which
crazy.
Which mimics what I think Asriel wears in Undertale before he... Just let you know that.
Interesting.
The
whole context here is that like you immediately think that, oh, is this like a sequel to Undertale? But there's no way that's possible as you witness more events.
The events. Yeah.
It doesn't seem like it could be a prequel either. At least not like a typical prequel. But even after that, you end up meeting a bully. Later on in the game, you start to realize some of the troubles and conflicts that each of these families and citizens in this monster-filled town have as well. It seems like there's a lot of dark shit going on that we're just kind of not exposed to yet. Kind of like, I don't know. I kind of want to make the comparison to Night in the Woods, but not entirely. Night in the Woods is similar in that it takes place in the town and there's a lot of dark shit happening. You just don't really get to know about it until you progress further and further into the game. But there's a lot of meta stuff going on in this game too. As soon as you drop into the dark world, all of the characters have like drastic outfit changes, or the two characters that descend into the dark world.
Even their skin color gets a little bit more vibrant.
Yeah, the main character, who is originally just human-colored, if you will, flesh-colored, turns blue, and instead of having the green and yellow outfit, now ends up with a predominantly like blue outfit with the pink scarf
sash or something. Yeah,
yeah,
and it's an armor set too. Like it looks like plate armor a little bit,
which leads me to believe that like there's that intentional connection between Frisk and the protagonist there, as opposed to Kara and the protagonist beforehand.
Wait, why is that?
Because Frisk is predominantly blue and pink, which is also your same palette when you're in the dark world.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Man, I kind of knew that when we talked about this, there would be some stuff I wouldn't have noticed that you'd bring up. I'm glad that we're able to have a fair exchange here.
I don't really know if there's a whole lot we have to really cover. I just wanted to hit some points that I thought were like really interesting from the get-go.
If anybody's played Undertale, I think it's a no-brainer that they should check out Deltarune. maybe using a burner computer or device of some sort, or if they physically cannot do it, which is like in Cookie's case, but they're very interested, like watch a playthrough or something, because this is it brings up a lot of I don't know, I guess questions or things to think about in relevance to Undertale, which I think is a game that if anybody's played it, I feel like most people came out with a really positive experience and like interest in it. I don't think it's a game that you easily like pick up, put down, and then never consider again, or think is a relatively like bland or meh experience. Like, it's a very solid game if you stick through. And it's not more of the same, but it certainly is a continuation onto the excitement that that first game brought.
Can we spoil the ending of it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So
we open the floodgates.
So the whole premise of Deltarune has the characters, Susie, who is this bully that throughout the course of the game kind of redeems herself in light of the audience or player.
In struggle with her horribly violent tendencies.
Yeah, it's like she's very stereotypical school bully.
She's Bender from The Breakfast Club. Yeah. But she'll actually murder.
Well, or at least it seems to give you the impression, right? But when when push comes to shove, she obviously cannot bring herself to do it. And that's when she kind of makes her face turn, going from heel to face. And and I mean, like, it's extremely obvious that that's going to end up happening, but it doesn't make it feel any worse, I would say. It still feels real good. But anyways, you as this character, this human named Chris, excuse me, which is obviously close to Frisk.
Which is actually what I named my character, just C-H-R-I-S instead of K-R-I-S, because I wanted Cookie to enjoy the experience somewhat.
Thank you.
Well, if you name your character Chris with a K, the game notices that it, or notes that it's a very interesting coincidence or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
Also, by the way, if you name your human, if you name yourself Gaster, the game just crashes on you. So following that Undertale interesting bit of... the whole point about going into the dark world is that you want to get yourself out, but in doing so, you have to perform some sort of thing that hopefully helps the dark world as well. At least that's what your character, your third-party member, Rousey, tells you, who's the only darkener in your party.
Who looks like Azrael.
Yeah, the twist at the end when Rousey's starting to tear up and mumble about, like, you know, being so happy to meet you and sad that you're going away. Susie tells Rousey to take off, to stop mumbling. So he takes off this hat that's been kind of shading his entire face this whole time. And it turns out that he's a cow goat person, just like Toriel, Asgore, and Azrael, and he apparently looks an awful lot like Azrael does in this world as well, potentially.
We don't know.
It's still...
And he seems younger, too.
Like, yeah.
The assumption in the game is that Azrael is older than you, and your Frisk-like character, Chris, also looks older than Frisk's character model in Undertale, so it's like a childhood representation of him, which... to align with what happens when you return to the light world in this game, it could be all imagination or play acting, essentially, because what happens to you in the game at the very end is you realize your trip to the dark world is also mirrored by a bunch of like play objects in the space that you get lost in. And so it gives off this like, was it only a dream kind of vibe?
And there's some degree of like acknowledgement that it had to have been a shared experience, because Susie and Chris both seem to acknowledge
it happened.
But the only reason we can think that it's supposed to look like Azrael is because Susie, the character that actually talks in your party, has a very strange reaction when Rousey, quote unquote, Azrael, takes off their hat and exposes this, you know, this reveal. But I think a lot of that is overshadowed by the ending sequence, which has Chris tearing out his heart This is when Chris goes to bed. Chris tears out his heart after getting up in the middle of the night, throwing the heart in the birdcage violently, and then creating a knife, like literally materializing this knife in his other hand, looking at the camera, and one of his eyes, I think, shining or something through the shadow of its hair.
Red.
Yeah, its hair, I guess, technically, because his or her hair. We don't know Chris is a girl or a guy, just like Frisk. There's one thing to point out, which I didn't know about until I've read it on Reddit, but apparently after he throws the heart into the birdcage, you can move the heart.
Oh.
Which indicates that the heart, your soul, the red heart, is you, the player. Supported by another thing that when you find your first save point, the save you're replacing says Chris at a playtime of 0:00. And when you save over that, you replace it with your player name.
Yeah, okay, that's right. Also, the playtime, I couldn't tell if it was minutes. I think it's in minutes because I was getting to a point where it showed like very high numbers before the colon.
Like 176, 184.
Yeah, something like that. And I was like, it's not included with my Undertime or my Undertale playtime either. Like, there's no way I would have ever put in that much time to this game.
And yeah, you're right. It's minutes.
Okay.
But so it doesn't seem like that ending changes no matter what you do through the course of the game. Chris ends up ripping you out and throwing you in the birdcage. And there seems to be a lot of anecdotal evidence to point out that this is a regular occurrence. Toriel mentions that tells you before you go to bed not to eat the whole pie like you did last time. And some fans are indicating that the pie eating is actually supportive evidence that, like, ripping out your heart should probably kill you, but luckily that whole pie will heal all of your HP. I don't know if that has to actually do with it, but I mean, it could be just based on the fact that, like, this soulless Chris ultimately does things that are not indicative of what the player would want to do, like eating the entire pie. And the game really does kind of force you to play peacefully because you can't kill anything.
Yeah, the game has this weird conflict between violent or negative vessel and then the player trying to do good, I think, in this particular game versus Undertale, in which it's kind of like that's an obscured thing, that what you're doing is good or bad, at least for a little bit in the game. In this one, it's very clear like what the player would want to do is normally a pacifistic or a like non-violent approach to this game. Meanwhile, now the game mechanically, your character vessel is performing acts that you would find undesirable as a player trying to meet those goals or ends. It's good, man. Yeah. I love it. It's jarring. It's a struggle. It is a continuation of some very fun characters that were introduced in Undertale. Also, I think they killed off some because there's a graveyard you can visit that mentions some familiar characters.
Is it necessarily killing them off? There are some characters that definitely are in the graveyard. Yeah. The biggest theory that I think makes the most sense at this point is that this is the timeline Sans was trying to get back to.
Okay. Yeah. So, because that's the other thing too, is Sans, I think, meets you at the very end of the game and does not know who you are, or at least implies that you've never met.
Yep. It seems to me like the game, but okay, some more meta shit going on here. I think you as the player are actually the solar embodiment of the protagonist from Undertale. And that's why when you encounter Sans, the way he talks seems to imply that the protagonist or you are like recognize him, and he's like, "Whoa, yes. Hold on here. I don't know who you are." But the big points of interest here are that the game acknowledges that Sans doesn't know anyone here, but he still seems to have his brother Papyrus. We don't get to see him, but it's implied based on
his house.
Yep, exactly.
He talks about his brother. Yeah.
the big thing here is that in Undertale, Sans talks about trying to go back but giving up on it. And it talks about having three friends, or like a picture, like a badly drawn picture with him and three friends, and something like mm-hmm. "Don't Forget" written on it as well. So people are attributing that those three friends might be the protagonist, Toriel and Alphys, or it could actually be the three heroes in the Dark World, the mm-hmm. protagonist, Susie, and Ralsei, quote unquote, Asriel, whatever.
Yeah. The color palette for that Spade kid too, and his actions are very jokester like, and very Sans esque. He's like a very dumb Sans instead.
He's kind of a combination between Sans and Papyrus, right?
Yeah, yeah. He's very much a like fusion of the two personalities. An incredibly funny character.
Yeah. Man, what was it? There was one more big thing I wanted to point out. Oh, by the way, the game Deltarune does also spy a bit on your computer as well, because it looks for if you've played Undertale before on that computer mm-hmm. and if you committed a genocide run.
I was wondering if it would look for that data.
Man, I don't... There was
it
one
didn't
other
find
big
it,
thing.
The computer, even the computer that I was on, let alone the flash drive that I partitioned it to, neither of those have touched Undertale, so... Mine didn't find it on my computer.
Did yours, Neil? Did yours?
I never did a genocide run because I'm not a fucking asshole. So, I mean, I'm aware of it. Like, I watched it, which makes me like a bystander to a crime.
You
as
co-signed
opposed to,
it, yeah.
Yeah. I witnessed the crime and did not report it, but I did not commit the crime myself. So if that yeah. makes me guilty of something, I guess it does.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The big things that kind of have me so hyped about this game, and like maybe not, like I don't need to be this hyped because the creator himself said that it'd probably be years until it gets done. Hopefully that's kind of a lie, just like how he says that your actions and choices don't matter, because I think they definitely
they do.
Will.
Yeah.
But
it does show that he's hard at work in the library.
So he actually had, he showed a tweet or a picture in a tweet where he showcases some of the scripts, and the file is like the file creation date is in the background on the like in the Windows Explorer, you know, screen mm-hmm. and it says 2012
mm.
and there's references in Undertale to a character named Susie that some random NPC, a clam person, tells you that you should meet Susie, my neighbor's daughter, and if you go back and talk to him again after you've completed the game pacifist run wise mm-hmm. he basically alludes to the fact that, well, I guess, you know, fate foretold that you two would not meet this time, but there are infinite possibilities, yada yada. This is paraphrased because I don't recall the exact quote, but he basically seems to indicate that the Susie character is very important, and that maybe in another reality you would have met her or something like that. So, and not to mention, of course, there's just a bunch of shit going on, a bunch of little hints and points that seem to connect Undertale to Deltarune, despite the fact that they seem to take place in alternate realities or timelines. And what makes me most excited is it seems like Deltarune has either he did a really good job setting up a lot of open-ended clues with the expectation that he'll end up making another game, or that he had this planned all
this
along.
This is all part of a magnum opus.
I mean, Deltarune is an anagram of Undertale.
Same with Ralsei, Asriel. Chris and Frisk are only a letter off from mm-hmm. one another. All that good stuff. Yep.
Yeah. Deltarune. Okay, sorry, that was a big tangent, and I feel like our Chris is probably like, man, fuck this game.
I think he fell asleep.
He's looking at his phone.
No, I'm not.
He's looking at porn.
Can't prove anything.
He's just asleep.
All right, are you on Pornhub right now, or Hamster? What's the Hamster one?
Gross. What?
Amazon, actually.
Oh, okay. He buys the DVDs and then watches them.
Oh.
the responsible thing to do.
The M&M approach.
No, I'm looking at things for... I ordered a Spark Maker last week as well. 3D printer.
Oh, 3D printer. Nice.
Yeah, resin-based 3D printer, so getting some things for it. Anyway, nice. Video games.
Yeah, we're done talking about Deltarune. How has your experience been with Red Dead 2, Cookie?
So, the game is slow in a good way, I guess.
Yeah, it definitely isn't like Spider-Man where you can get ramped up into the story and then all of a sudden it's over. Like this game is definitely a slow burn on what it teaches you and what you can do for like the first 10 hours or something.
Yep, I lost my first duel and then quickly loaded back up into the previous save state and then won that duel because fuck that guy. And then everyone was like, man, you're such an asshole.
Did you know that if you lose often enough at certain things, you have an option to skip the checkpoint, essentially?
Oh, nice. I didn't know
that. I
got
into it because the gunslinger duels have been incredibly difficult for me because the tutorial comes up while it's happening, which makes it very difficult to learn how to do it when you're also being gunned down within the same period of time. But that was the majority of my complaint.
Which is why I lost my first duel as well, because I was also reading. I was like, oh, slowly press in.
And then you're dead. Right, you're like, trigger, okay.
Press. Oh, I got shot. Okay. Loading screen.
I don't like when games force you or hold your hand too much. But I think at times they could have been done a little better, because there are points where you can kind of interrupt the tutorial thinking that you're doing it correctly.
And then never go back to being instructed the right way.
Right. I think it's highlighted in some way just by even like chapter one's missions. Like the game tells you to protect Dutch or Duke or whatever his name is. So I'm immediately like, well, that means it's time to fucking shoot. And then you immediately start shooting. And then Dutch is like, what are you doing? You're an idiot, Arthur.
Dutch does say play it cool.
Like, protect Dutch. I'm going to protect him.
There's definitely like those sequences where you're like, do I act now? And then seconds later, your ally is gunned down. You're like, I guess so. And then the next time you go to do it, you're like, this time I'm going to act preemptively. And it's like, no, you're supposed to be stealthy, you idiot. You blew our cover. And it's like, fuck, I don't know what do you want?
I mean, it forces you really to play the fool at times, which Arthur doesn't seem like he's stupid.
Like,
Arthur's not stupid, but at the same time, he doesn't always talk like the brightest man in the bunch.
Well, he has a cowpoke, and I guess also, this game is just all about disappointing Dutch, so Dutch becomes the bad guy in Red Dead Redemption, so...
Yes. The second issue I had, and I wanted to touch back on your whole thing about the game being on the slow side. The game is definitely slow in movement, whether you're on a horse or otherwise. Like, the horse doesn't feel like it consistently can go as fast as you'd like it to be. But I think, you know, a lot of that is thematic to how they want you to play the game. The big thing
me,
though...
Oh, yeah,
you
can't cross that map easy.
The big thing for me, though, is more that, like, at times I get Witcher 3 flashbacks where, like, I just want to move like a normal human being to this door, or, like, I want to move to this cupboard to get some beans or something.
And crash into it.
And my Witcher 3, like, sort of momentum movement makes it extremely hard to do things like turn and look at this cupboard or turn and look at this whatever the fuck.
It's not a great recommendation, but the first person perspective, although it's a little nauseating, does help with that, I think, to some degree.
Ooh, I haven't tried this in first person. I put it in first person once, but I was behind my horse, so I got a lot of horse balls in my face.
Oh,
it's like, okay, done with this mode.
Yeah, I exclusively use it in really tight indoor areas. If it's not that tight, I don't activate it. But if you're in like a small cabin, activating the first person can help a lot for you to even see like what the fuck is in the drawer. Because I have a relatively big TV now, but sometimes that extra level of detail, A, helps me move with a little more precision, and B, know what I'm actually picking up or going to pick up before I hold square.
Just hold square. Pick it all up. Pick everything up. Why are you not picking everything up?
Well, let's say
that wheel of cheese.
Let's say I already have a full pack of premium cigarettes because I don't like my character to smoke. I worry about his long-term health. Is he going to die before I get to the 100% finish of the game?
Is he going to die before Red Dead Redemption?
Yeah, is he going to die? So anyway, in trying to keep Arthur relatively healthy, to keep those health insurance costs lower, I don't smoke cigarettes very often or cigars, but the premium cigarettes are how you get those cards, which have some value as collectibles. You can sell them, or there's later a mission that's relevant to them. If I see that there's a pack, but I'm full on cigarettes, I'll smoke a premium cigarette so I can pick up the whole pack so I can get the card, for instance.
So you do want him to smoke?
I mean, I only want him to smoke when it's financially beneficial. I'm a very pragmatic smoker in this case.
I could dig it.
I don't touch those stogies. I sell those babies and the Tennessee whiskey. Bad for the heart.
Just out of curiosity, how big of a part does John Marston play in Red Dead 2?
John Marston? He's a bit of an idiot. He so far has been more trouble than he's worth. I don't know what the deal is with John Marston, but Arthur's got a chip on his shoulder about him. And John Marston is mostly a pain in my ass, because when I do missions with him, they don't go very well. And I don't know anything about Red Dead, so you'll have to fill me in on what the point of him being there is. Like, I get that the gang splits up and I assume almost all of them show up in Red Dead Redemption as antagonists or other characters at some point, but honestly, with some of these people, I'm like, I would much rather just shoot you in the head in this prequel than have to deal with you in Red Dead. Like, I agree with Arthur that I hate most of the people in my like bandit group outside of Hosea.
I could dig it.
Yeah.
I got nothing to say about John Marston yet at this moment.
But so it sounds like he
brains out.
It sounds like he plays a part in this game, and it's not like, all right, you need to go so we don't mess with you until Red Dead Redemption 1.
Yeah, no, none of these the characters that appear later, because you guys are both just at the start of chapter 2, there are other characters that essentially were separated from your band that you re-encounter, and I won't explain how or why, but there's definitely like character building that's happening with missions with these characters that you're immediately around and the ones that you encounter later that were once a part of your bandit group. I won't say if they are or are not, depending on who they are, based on your encounter. I guess that was about as ambiguous as I could get. But your interactions with these folks develops their character more than it lets you really form much of an opinion on them outside of like, these missions that I go on with this guy consistently suck because they go to shit, and these missions with this guy aren't so bad. Like, you have less moral ambiguity in them or whatnot. So that, I don't know, they build perspectives on each character.
No, no, no.
I don't know what else to say right now. Yeah, it's hard because I want you guys to enjoy the game without me spoiling anything. Because this
worry.
Is a game, like, the story's great, so I don't feel like it's a smooth move to accidentally mention something that could be a fun twist or shocking event that happens, even though I don't have the background of knowing that I assume it all goes to shit, and that's how Red Dead Redemption starts.
Yeah, pretty much. Maybe. Who knows?
I think maybe this game has more potential story-wise, if you don't know much about Red Dead Redemption 1?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it a lot. Like, it's a great story as far as I'm concerned. I didn't know that Dutch was the primary antagonist in Red Dead Redemption, but the game... No, that's fine. Because the game definitely starts out where I'm like, man, there's some tension between me and Dutch, you know, with him being a shitty boss and all.
And you definitely get the feeling that between the two seniors in this gang, Dutch and Isaiah?
Hosea. They're ideologically opposed.
Hosea seems like the much more like logical, like, oh, Hosea makes a lot of sense. And Dutch is just, yeah, the Dutch way or the highway.
Dutch is greedy and selfish, and that's like there's dialogue that happens that really indicates that that's his true nature, even though he's talking about the group and the team. Like, there's a moment where I caught him talking about what the next move is, and he says, and you know, it's like those kind of stumbles that I'm like, yeah, you are a piece of shit, Dutch. Like, Hosea, you spend some time with bonding as well, because you guys are the three, I guess, original bandits together, and you spend one-on-one time with Jose, and it really builds the relationships between you and these two power centers and their different ideologies. Dutch is very much like guns and glory, and Hosea, at multiple points, even during these prologues that you encounter, which that's not spoiling much, is very intent on taking care of everyone, getting them somewhere safe and setting up a life that they can live, you know? Dutch doesn't have those types of, I think, goals, and it's pretty evident early on. And as I've continued in the game, there's really just a lot of illumination of the stark differences between these two paths that Dutch and Hosea want to take.
Right.
Great fishing simulator. Great fishing simulator, gotta say.
Is it good? I haven't fished yet.
I mean, it fishes like any other fishing game. It's like, cast your line, wiggle the bait. Okay, start reeling. Wait, he's struggling. Move him around a bit. Okay, reel in the fish some more. It's very repetitive and a little dumb, but man, fishing games are surprisingly satisfying. Like, fishing and fishing games are the two closest replicas of one another. Because fishing is boring and takes very little effort, and so is fishing in video games.
I would say that, not to change topics, but...
Please do.
Just a quick aside... Final Fantasy 15 has the best fishing in any video game I've ever played.
Yeah.
Even Fishing Planet?
Yes. Oh, I mean, I will know. I've never played a fishing video game, but I still know for a fact Final Fantasy 15.
Played Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. I don't know what you're talking about.
Dude, Final Fantasy 15 has the absolute best fishing, straight down to like the exciting battle music that pops up as soon as you get a catch, and then like all of the commentary from the other three guys in your party, yeah, also at the same time, like, rooting you on, like, oh, you, look out, your line's about to break.
Can you fish up a final boss or a hidden boss in a lake?
God, like, I don't know. I hope
have you just
so.
Pulled a hydra out of the water? Like,
I mean,
that sounds very Final Fantasy to me. Put a little piece of cheese on the end of the hook, toss it out to the center of the lake. Boom! You have your Dark Souls hydra fight.
What makes me so hyped about Final Fantasy 15 fishing is that instead of having stats like, I mean, I think line durability is like the one accurate stat in that whole system, because otherwise
throwing
it's like
steel cable.
Your lure has attack, your different rods have defense, and it's like a bunch of RPG stats for your fishing.
That is some fun bullshit. Okay, I like that idea.
Also, any other games you guys have been playing aside from Red Dead?
Call of Duty.
Cookies on that Call of Duty.
It's still good. Got nothing for you, man.
Are you using a revolver in it? Are you trying to like cross play that Red Dead experience in Call of Duty?
So I don't have the revolver unlocked at the moment, but I am using a pistol for a majority of my things. I'm going for the gold camo on my pistol right now.
Nice.
Do you ever, like, when you get the when you get the revolver, are you going to start quoting on stream about how reloading has never felt this good before? Or what is it that Ocelot says? This reload time is exhilarating.
Nah, I just as soon as I see the entire team there, I just go, it's high noon, and then and then go to shoot one person and then get shot in the face.
Hey, it is a McCree simulator in that sense, then. It's so, yeah. Hot.
Oh, I guess speaking of McCree, there's a new character in Overwatch. That's exciting.
It's a sniper lady. I heard, I only saw this on Twitter, so I don't know how much of this information is actually valuable, but apparently people have been torching, Ashe, yeah, they've been torching Blizzard for not having a diverse character there, even though it's probably one of the most diverse AAA games we've ever seen.
How is she not diverse?
She's a white lady.
They don't have a black Jewish character yet.
Yeah. Wait, I thought Symmetra was black and Jewish.
Wait, really?
Symmetra's Indian.
Oh, damn.
Yep, there you go. Just fill that gap.
That makes more sense. But yeah, she's a Western using a repeating rifle.
Oh, that's cool.
That's exciting for me. Well, a lever action rifle, excuse me.
Ashe, a sniper character. Interesting. I know another white-haired Ashe who's a sniper character in a popular game.
I wouldn't call her a sniper. Once again, it's still just a semi-automatic rifle.
I wouldn't call the other Ashe a sniper either, although her gameplay kind of has sniping elements to it.
Snipe-ish. Well, this VentureBeat article says a versatile sniper, so that's what I thought. And her rifle looks like it's scoped.
Yeah, it's not. It's definitely a... it's pretty much an Elo scope on it, but that's here nor there. But I guess since we're talking about Overwatch, that just brings into Blizzard. Are you guys... Is anyone excited about...
Diablo Mobile?
Diablo? Immortals?
No.
You have phones, don't you? From what I understand, there were people in the Diablo community who were upset that these mechanics were being put on the mobile platform and they weren't going to implement them on the PC version. And that is the extent of my information on that.
Well, you got more information than me. My information is people are upset that there is a mobile game.
Yeah, okay. And I think that's why. No, that's all I got.
Yeah, let's wrap this up, boys. If you have comments or questions, you can send in anything to podcast@fancyramen.com, except malicious things.
Send in malicious things as well. Scott, you're next.
Yeah, I have that isolated flash drive, so you can send me malicious things. The only thing it will destroy is itself when I uninstall Deltarune. to keep it short and sweet, please share our podcast with your friends if you think they'd enjoy it. We'd appreciate that.
And I'm still waiting for more reviews on Apple Podcasts so that way I could start reading reviews on Apple Podcasts.
You guys do anything exciting? Streaming, whatever? Cookie?
I shall be, just for your entertainment, streaming more Call of Duty, possibly some Red Dead Redemption, and taking out the garbage.
Yeah, I'm trying to stream every time I play Red Dead as well, and I'm going to make it a thing where Sunday mornings before we podcast, I'll be streaming Suikoden. So
nobody wants
on the first
to see
game.
Me stream Red Dead, but maybe if I can figure it out, I might do some RimWorld streaming and you can watch me lead a bunch of pawns to an untimely death over and over again as I try and learn the mechanics of that game.
All right, links will be listed below if I don't suck too much. Have a good week, everybody. See you next one.
Chicken.